The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
Well, on the one major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents. Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. Hold on tight. This is going to be a fun one today. It is Tuesday, May 31st, 2011, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for this beta run of our new LibraMater software. That's right, we got new software running the show here, so hold on tight. Like I said, there may be some fun glitches for us to work out as we go. So thanks for joining us for the beta test. Also joining us here in the studio is our good friend Ganja John.
Hey, the button works. The button worked, man.
All right. Excellent. All the buttons are still working. Yeah. How was your Memorial Day weekend? You went down to Roseburg, right?
Yeah, I went down to Roseburg and had a good time. Tended to the garden pretty much all weekend. Spent time with the family.
Oh, what good stuff do we have in the garden this harvest?
All kinds of stuff. I couldn't even begin to name them all.
All right. Well, we'll have to take inventory and do a little show and tell later on, I suppose. Also, we've got Cannabis Carrie in our virtual studio in Grastoria. Hi, Carrie. I think we've got
Hi,
Carrie.
Guys.
There she is. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing great. How was your long weekend? It seems like you got tons of stuff done.
Oh, we had a good time, and we visited you up there in Grastoria. Had a good little barbecue. Damon and Jen came up as well from the chat room. So good times right up there.
I just have to say, you know that I hate kids, but Damon and Jen Alexander's children are so sweet and well-behaved.
Aw, that's the nicest thing. All right. Well, what do we got in our news today, Carrie?
Well, today we're going to go over that lawsuit that was filed last week by the governor of Arizona. Also, I've got some sporting news I'm going to fit in, and a woman in Florida who is suing for unlawful arrest.
Oh, all right. All that's coming up right after our first break here on Normal Show Live. Also on today's show, it's Electric Tuesday, so we've got some music from Cannabis Cure UK, who edits our tunes. Sata Spliff and Emperor Selassie I will be our tune for today. Also, speaking of Electric Tuesday, you'll be able to catch a one-hour block of Electric Tuesday music at 3 a.m., 9 a.m., 3 p.m., and 6 p.m., every Tuesday. And then every weekday, a one-hour block just like that at 3, 9, and 3, and 9. So tomorrow on Wednesday, you get an hour block of reggae. On Thursday, an hour block of grooving music. So check that out at 3 a.m., 9 a.m., 3 p.m., and 9 p.m. Also on today's show, Cannabis Community, we're going to talk with Dr. Dale Gehringer from California Normal about 1 million registered medical marijuana patients, and we'll wind up with a radical rant. Stick around.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
In today's busy world, we're inundated by advertising for all types of pharmaceuticals that come with a laundry list of potential side effects. Shouldn't you have better medical choices? Natural alternatives to pills pushed by Big Pharma? At Alternative Medical Choices, you can choose natural, safe, and effective alternative therapies that are right for your budget without nasty side effects. Cannabis, or marijuana, has been a legal medicine in the Pacific Northwest since 1998. Our doctors will help determine your qualifications for a medical marijuana recommendation in Oregon, no matter where you live. Our massage therapist will ease your aches and stress with soothing hemp seed oil or cannabis-infused massage salves. We also offer acupuncture, Reiki, and other alternative health therapies. Call Alternative Medical Choices in Portland, Oregon at 503-288-5579 or visit our website at www.altmedchoices.com. We specialize in out-of-state recommendations. That's www.altmedchoices.com or call 503-288-5579.
As High Times Senior Cultivation Editor, I'm often called into the field and asked to sample or even identify exotic strains of marijuana in their natural habitat. Now, for the first time, I've compiled more than 120 of my favorite strains into this single field guide designed to fit into your pocket as you travel the world in search of your favorite plant. From a friend's closet grow room to the wilds of Northern California, this single guide covers all of today's best-known strains, plus heirlooms and throwbacks, including High Times quality photos and information on each variety's genetic heritage and growing characteristics, plus my personal notes on aroma, flavor, and potency. So this is Danny Danko, author of the official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains, wishing you good times and great ganja.
The official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains is available at hightimes.com and finer bookstores.
Marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
She made her intentions known last week, but on Friday, Arizona Governor Jan Brewer and the Arizona Attorney General took the state's new medical marijuana law to court. Late on Friday, AG Tom Horn sued the U.S. Justice Department and other defendants on behalf of the state and Governor Brewer. The suit is seeking clarification on whether strict compliance with the new Arizona law provides protection from federal prosecution. Arizona's medical marijuana law was approved by voters in Arizona in November, but a May letter from U.S. Attorney Burke warning the state that marijuana is still illegal under federal law has emboldened Governor Brewer to sue the government to try and get a clear answer on whether their state citizens can use medical marijuana with impunity. Other medical marijuana states have received similar letters, but have chosen to either ignore them in most cases or back down on regulational bills governing medical marijuana, such as Governor Chris Gregoire in Washington State, or Rhode Island Governor Lincoln Chafee, who put plans for his state to license 3 dispensaries on hold. Attorney General Horn said that the suit is intended to get a court ruling that, quote, makes it clear what direction we can safely go, either to implement the law or that we cannot, unquote. The suit also names some medical marijuana supporters that accepted an invitation to be included in the case to ensure that the law gets a vigorous defense. Governor Brewer said the lawsuit was prompted by a wish to ensure that her state employees are not prosecuted for helping license and enforce dispensaries or patients, a perceived threat since the letter did not mention either state employees or medical marijuana patients, but did say that the Justice Department reserves the rights to prosecute individuals and organizations engaged in illegal manufacturing and distributing. In response to his letter, U.S. Attorney Burke told the Arizona Republic, who was seeking a statement on the matter, that, quote, we have no intention of targeting or going after people who are implementing or who are in compliance with state law, but at the same time, they cannot be under the impression that they have immunity, amnesty, or safe haven. Brewer might have been responding to a letter that was sent to the state of Washington that did raise the prospect that state employees who administer the medical marijuana program would not be immune from a liability under federal drug law. Arizona has already approved 3,696 applications from patients to have and use medical marijuana. Out of those, 2,694 were also given a permit to grow their own medical marijuana up to 12 plants each. And so far, 69 applications for caregiver status has been approved, and each of them could have up to 5 patients, although the vast majority of those will probably only have 1 patient each. Accepting applications for dispensaries, something that was part of the Arizona medical marijuana law, was supposed to begin this Wednesday. But Governor Brewer is expected to direct the Department of Health Services to not proceed with that part of the program until they get a ruling. a process that could take months or even years.
Delay, 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 stall, delay, stonewall. That's everything they want to do here. Jan Brewer, the governor of Arizona, was vocally against Prop 203 when it was from the signature gathering phase all the way till the last recount when it passed with 50.13% of the vote. So don't believe her for a second when she's saying, oh, we're just seeking clarity. We just want to make sure that our employees are not in danger of prosecution. Come on now, Governor Brewer. You know that's not the case here. What she's reacting to is the U.S. attorney letters to Washington State. Now, in the Washington State proposal that got vetoed by Governor Gregoire, the state employees were actually involved in inspecting and handling and being around the cannabis itself. So the prospect of them being possibly arrested or prosecuted by federal authorities for what they were engaged in on a state level was much more real in the Washington scenario. In the Arizona scenario, the state employees have such a tangential relationship to what's going on in the sales and distribution and cultivation of marijuana that it would be unthinkable that the feds would come in and start prosecuting them for what they're involved in. They would have no more level of involvement than the employees we've seen in New Mexico, in Rhode Island, in Colorado, who with state approval are engaged in the licensing and regulation of medical marijuana dispensaries. This is just a stall tactic. It's a scare tactic by the governor, and the U.S. attorney himself said, I didn't say anything about busting your state employees, and I think if I didn't say anything about it, you could read something into that. So, Jan Brewer, you're not fooling anyone. We know how you stand. When it comes to Mexicans, the federal government is wrong and Arizona is right, but when it comes to medical marijuana, the federal government is right and Arizona is wrong, in your opinion.
And college sports fans were shocked this weekend by the resignation of Ohio Buckeyes' beloved and winning football coach, Jim Tressel. He has been praised for his integrity during the 11 years he spent as the head coach for the powerhouse college team. He resigned over allegations of his players accepting gifts strictly forbidden with the ruling college sports committee, the NCAA, and then covering up the infractions and then lying to officials about the cover-up. In an in-depth look into the allegations by Sports Illustrated, they say the infractions can be traced back to at least 2002, when a local tattoo parlor began accepting players' memorabilia, such as tournament rings, as payment for tattoos. That led to bigger items, such as impressive car deals for athletes and their families. Sports Illustrated is also alleging that some players traded memorabilia for marijuana. In December, five Ohio State players, including their star quarterback, Terrell Pryor, were found to have received cash and discounted tattoos from the owner of a local tattoo parlor. Some of the tattoo artists are now coming forward to discuss the memorabilia that players traded for tattoo work, from rings, jackets, signed footballs, and even a magazine signed by Coach Tressel himself. According to the tattoo artist that worked at Dudley Z's tattoo parlor, the place became a well-known social hub for the athletes who hung out in the back room of the business, danced to music that was always provided by a DJ, and drank alcohol and smoked marijuana that was provided by people at the shop. Since Coach Tressel resigned, the Buckeyes will be saving a ton of money. They will not be required to pay any buyout or severance to Tressel, who made about $3.5 million a year.
$3.5 million a year. My God, I wonder how many professors that could pay. I wonder how many school books that could buy. But anyway, here, Ohio State University, the Ohio State University, Coach Jim Tressel. Wasn't it the president of Ohio State University that was talking about Boise State and the other non-automatic qualifiers as playing the sisters of the poor? They weren't worthy of playing with the big leagues here. Well, maybe it's because you guys in the big leagues keep trading stuff for weed and all of that. You got kind of an edge on us here. You know, the whole NCAA system, I know this is not a sports show, it's a weed show, of course, but, you know, I just recently have been catching up on some back episodes of South Park. And there is a fantastic back episode of South Park from last year that equates NCAA, it was Crack Baby Athletic Association. That's what it was called, if you want to look it up. And it equated how we treat these college athletes pretty much like slaves. These universities, the coach here is getting paid $3.5 million, but the kids are getting busted if they trade one of their jerseys for some cash or something like that, right? They're not allowed to make any money yet these universities, like the Ohio State University, are allowed to sanction these guys, license these guys' names and likenesses for use in EA Sports video games. Everybody gets rich except for these college athletes. And the vast majority of these kids are not going to go pro. They're not going to go semi-pro. They probably won't even get D-League. They'll probably end up having to do some sort of other job that has nothing to do with athletics. And we want to try to punish them. And to bring this back around to cannabis, it just once again shows that these high-level competitive athletes are smart enough to not jeopardize their scholarships and not jeopardize their playing careers by getting involved in drugs that could harm their performance. The fact that they're trading memorabilia for weed just tells me that they're smart enough to recognize what is the most safe, effective, non-toxic painkiller they can take for the daily aches and pains they get out there playing football.
And a woman in Florida who was arrested for felony marijuana possession is suing for wrongful arrest. She might just have a case. She was charged with marijuana possession, even though the bag that they caught her with turned out to be sage. 49-year-old Robin Brown says a Broward County Sheriff's deputy caught her while she was birdwatching back in March of 2009. He used his field kit on the herb she had in a bag and said that in the field it tested positive for marijuana. The deputy then sent the 50 grams of substance to a state crime lab. Her lawsuit says that she was arrested before the test was actually performed. Her arrest was ordered by the assistant state attorney, Mark Horn, back in June of 2009, and she was arrested at her place of business, Massage Envy, in Weston. She said that she was arrested in front of coworkers and her customers and subjected to a full-body cavity search during her overnight stay in jail. When her lawyers discovered the herbs had not been tested a second time, he used the courts to force the test, which determined what Mrs. Brown was contending all along: her sage was completely marijuana-free. Her lawsuit against Broward State Attorney's Office accused them of negligence and malicious prosecution, but it was dismissed in January in a ruling that said prosecutors receive immunity from lawsuits in the course of performing their duties. She is now appealing to the 4th District Court to obtain a jury trial in the case. It should happen this summer, and we'll let you know how it turns out.
Oh, what a sad case this is. But it's not surprising. I mean, a lot of you are listening to this, you go, are you kidding me? The cops can't tell sage from marijuana? I mean, they smell completely different. They don't even really look that much alike. Sage is kind of grayish, you know? But, you know, it's not, like I say, not surprising they can't tell the difference. I mean, American cops are the only cops of about 33, 34 countries in the world that can't tell the difference between marijuana and industrial hemp. Yeah, it's absolutely true. We've got 30,000 acres being grown in France, and about 50,000 acres being grown in China. We got about 11 countries in the European Union. You know, Denmark, for example. In South America, Chile is growing industrial hemp. They're growing it in Australia. They're growing it in China. And for some reason, the cops in all of those countries where cannabis for recreational use and medical use, for some extent, is still illegal, they are able to have legal industrial hemp because their cops there are smart enough to be able to tell the difference between a tall, reedy, about 15 to 18 foot tall, closely packed together, densely planted hemp plantation as compared to plants that are cultivated far apart and grown to be big, round, and bushy with great big sticky buds on them, you know, for recreational or medical consumption. Some reason the cops everywhere around the world can tell the difference between an 18-foot tall, skinny, close-together plant and big, fat, 6-foot, far-apart, bud-laden plants. I don't understand why American cops can't seem to come to this realization and understanding some of the basics of the plants that are supposed to be illegal in this country. I mean, really, if you are charged with keeping out of the hands of people a deadly, dangerous Schedule 1 herb, don't you think you ought to be able to identify that deadly, dangerous Schedule 1 herb and not confuse it with something that's completely legal, unscheduled, sage, for God's sake? Of course, the sensible thing to do would be to remove this barrier from our law enforcement, remove this requirement that they try to figure out which plants are good and which plants are bad. You know, I kind of look forward to a world where police are, oh, I don't know, call me crazy, in charge of stopping crimes, you know, protecting human beings from one another, not human beings from plants, right? We can call the Terminix guy, we can call the exterminator guy, we can call the lawn care guy to take care of plants we don't like. If there's a weed growing that you don't want, we can take care of that. We do not need the force of law enforcement and guns to tell us which plants we can and cannot use.
Starfish.
Well, that didn't work. 20 after the hour.
We're going to take a break. We'll fix the Liebermeter.
I'm Michael Russin. When I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Been busted? Need a lawyer? Call the Normal Legal Committee for an attorney near you. Find one at norml.org. Remember, attorneys are cheaper than a lifelong criminal drug record.
It's that freedom. Freedom. I'm free to do it.
Count your computer.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you tunes for Electric Tuesday, our segment featuring the best of modern electric music in the genres of dance, new age, house, and experimental. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's daily Toker Tunes.
Hey there, this is the Cannabis Cure UK weekly news podcast, bringing you today's Electric Tuesday for Normal Show Live. We're returning to one of my favourite new musicians, Satterspliff, who I play every week as my backing music. I love his chilled out and instrumental vibe. There's always an appropriate time for one of his tunes. A Normal Show Live has even started using one of my favourites, Hybrid, for one of his ads. The track Emperor Celestii, the first, like I say, is by Satterspliff. The chilled out trance beats with layered grooves make it a tune that entices me to light a big fat joint, close my eyes and throw my glow stick hands in the air. Get in the groove with Emperor Celestii and Satterspliff, light your bongs, pipes or joints. Don't forget to check out cureuk.podomatic.com for the Cannabis Cure UK weekly news podcast, episode 9 playing tonight at 8 o'clock here, live.normal.org. That's the premiere. Enjoy the rest of the show.
As I call upon the force of the Imperial Majesty, Emperor Haile Selassie of Ethiopia is the Almighty. I call upon the force of the Imperial Majesty, Emperor Haile Selassie of Ethiopia, is the Almighty. I call upon the force of the Imperial Majesty, Emperor Haile Selassie Ethiopia is the Almighty.
You want a copy of that song for your iPod? Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing Media and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Marijuana and alcohol are the two most popular recreational drugs in America. Marijuana smoking is non-toxic, relatively safe, and has a low risk of dependence. Alcohol drinking is potentially fatal, dangerous to society, and is quite addictive. Marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? That's the question of the new book, Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? By Paul Armentano, Mason Tvert, and Steve Fox. Visit Amazon.com or ChelseaGreen.com today to order your copy of Marijuana is Safer, or visit MarijuanaIsSafer.com.
The most devastating effect of the war on marijuana is that it is a war on everyday people like you and me. All week, we speak to the doctors, scientists, celebrities, and politicians who make up the professionals fighting for cannabis liberty. But we never forget about the tens of millions who use cannabis, the millions who need medical access to cannabis, and the hundreds of thousands arrested every year for cannabis, and the tens of thousands imprisoned under our marijuana laws. At Normal, we are the Cannabis Consumers Lobby, and we take this opportunity to share the experience of our cannabis community.
All right, we are definitely going to be talking about community and specifically how big the cannabis community is. Joining us by telephone from the Bay Area in California is the director of California Normal, Dale Gehringer. Dale, welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
You know, I found this was quite interesting because I was working on this post. I was trying to estimate, you know, I just got to thinking, I wonder how many medical marijuana patients there are in America. And it just turns out that you are doing the same thing with respect to California. So let's start with your side of the data. What did you find out about the patient population in California? Because we know, you know, there's no central registry. It's kind of hard to get these numbers. What did you estimate?
Well, based on pretty much compelling evidence from locations where we could get some data, we find it's somewhere between 2 and 3% of the state population, which works out to 750,000 to over a million patients in California.
Right, and we had seen previous estimates, you know, even just a few years ago that were saying 300,000, 400,000. Why were those estimates so low back then?
Well, I think the patient population has increased rather rapidly in the last few years. Mm-hmm. That was about 4 years ago that we had about 350,000 patient estimate, about 1% of the population as opposed to 2 or 3. But the data have really piled up there. The best data we have that we could look at were from the states of Colorado and Montana, which actually have mandatory patient registration. And as you know, there's been sort of an explosion of cannabis dispensaries and clinics both in those two states. And it resulted in a substantial increase in their local patient populations to the point where they have, 2.5% in the case of Colorado, 3% in the case of Montana. California's law has been around a lot longer than either state, and is actually more liberal in either state. More people are included. So we think that the two and a half to 3% that we see there are very reasonable for California as well. We also had some opportunity to look at some individual sources in California, in particular the Oakland Patient ID Center, which was keeping issuing identification cards here in the East Bay of Oakland and Berkeley, California. That had some fairly reliable numbers showing, again, on the order of 2.5% of all the population were medical marijuana users. So we feel fairly safe about projecting that to the state.
All right. Now, knowing that we've got upwards of a million patients in the state of California, what else does this tell us about medical marijuana as far as, you know, the opportunities being missed, say, in tax revenue or market share or anything like that that could help convince people that we really need to move even farther with marijuana legalization?
Well, the economic benefits are definitely pretty substantial. The retail market, we estimate between $1.5 and $4.5 billion per year. And as you know, there has been a lot of interest in taxation of the market here. In fact, just the other day, we heard a report, Mendocino County's new licensed grow program appears to be raising $300,000 for the county, enough to pay for some of the sheriff's deputies that got laid off, the budget cutbacks. The sheriff was rather happy about that program, obviously. We also had a report down here in the city of San Jose, which implemented a rather hefty, I must say, tax on the dispensaries, and they pulled in a couple $100,000 in the first month or so. So they're going to make millions of bucks this year off of it. So this is looking very attractive as business. And I think it's going to solidify medical marijuana here as it is doing in Colorado and as it might do elsewhere in the United States if the politicians would let it. I mean, we are looking at if it's 2% of the population, you know, in the United States, you know, that works out to 6 million Americans or more. And that's also an important, we think, political constituency.
Absolutely.
And that's, you know, on the order of the size of the gay population as well. So, you know, I hope. And I'm looking forward to the day when those patients are as well organized and well represented in Washington and elsewhere as other minority groups are today.
Yeah.
I'm very hopeful of the future.
Yeah, you have an interesting situation going on in California. And again, we're speaking with Dr. Dale Gehringer, the director of California Normal. Of course, California had the first law in 1996, Prop 215, and very loose as far as there not being a mandatory registry system. It's voluntary. There's a lot of differing regulations from county to county. What differences did you find as you looked across the state, county by county, in its use of medical marijuana? And specifically, did places with more dispensary access tend to have more patients?
Well, I don't have the data to validate that.
Okay.
So I can't tell you. However, I would notice, I think you can see it by looking at another state that is sort of similar to Colorado, which is Oregon, your own state.
Right.
Which has had a law that's actually been pretty successful and been around for longer than any other state's pretty much than California's. And in Oregon, you have 1% of the population, whereas in Colorado, Montana, California, it looks like over 2%. Well, why only 1%? Well, as you're aware, there really aren't any dispensaries active in Oregon. And I think that really makes a difference. Why should people even buy? A lot of people that become medical marijuana patients specifically take advantage of the fact there are dispensaries. You know, otherwise, there isn't a whole lot of advantage to it other than, you know, they can grow their own if they so dare. The other place that I think is interesting to look at is Hawaii, where one state, but several islands, and there's a huge difference between the Big Island of Hawaii, which has registration figures closing in on 2% now, and the main island, Oahu, which only has a tiny fraction of a percent. There's actually 20 times more users per capita on Big Island.
Huh.
Well, the Big Island, I've been out there, has some sympathetic cannabis doctors out there. And for some reason, there's hardly any doctor willing to prescribe medical marijuana on the main island of Oahu. So that makes a huge difference as well.
Okay. And you mentioned doctors here, and this is, again, something we can look at with the California system there. You know, you mentioned we got anywhere from 750,000 to 1.125 million patients estimated in California. And something our opponents like to do is they like to say, yeah, there's just a few pot docs, and they're writing 1,000 of these a day for all these people. Do you have any numbers for us on the number of different doctors in California that are now writing recommendations?
Well, I don't have any current numbers on that. I mean, as of many years ago, we tried to look at that. Probably 10 years ago, there were already over 1,000 doctors that were reported at the Oakland Patient ID Center at that time. So it's many thousands of doctors. We have a webpage of medical cannabis specialists. That's probably grown. It's grown from about 5 to probably close to 100 entries now over the years. So that's become a big field in its own right.
Okay. And as far as registering in California, for the folks listening in other medical marijuana states that have a mandatory registry system, can you give us a thumbnail sketch of what the system is there? I mean, it's county by county. Is there's voluntary? What's going on?
The rule is very, very simple. You are a legal patient in California. You have a doctor's recommendation to use marijuana. So it's between you and your doctor. And that's it, and that determines your legal status under the law. And if you're legal, you can also grow for your own. There are lots of different rules about how much you can grow for your own and where you can grow it and how you can grow it. That's been an area of lots and lots of local legislation and very complicated legislation, and some of it, frankly, not probably unconstitutionally restrictive, and it's all in the courts. It's a real mess as to what the laws are about local cultivation and cultivation by collectives, so you have more than one patient, is even more complicated an issue. So that varies all over. But eligibility of patients is very simple. It's having a doctor's recommendation. And since that is private information under state and federal law, nobody can really find out how many illegal patients there are in the state.
Right. So what about this voluntary system, though? How many voluntary registries do we have in California?
I forgot to mention, there is a state identification system, an official state identification system that was started some years after Proposition 215, where you can get an ID through the State Department of Health that is supposedly honored by the police throughout the state, so they don't have to check the legitimacy of your doctor's recommendation or whatever. Only like 1% of the people use that. I think there's 12,000 or so registered patients in that voluntary system. But since you don't need the card, the vast majority, the 750,000 to a million, don't have the card.
Okay. We're speaking with Dale Gehringer, the director of California Normal. You can learn more about California Normal on the web at canormal.org. Another thing about California's law, being the first law, of course, it was the most liberal. And like you said, the patient protections are fantastic, being that it's just a private, you know, doctor-patient relationship we're talking about here. But the downside of being the first is hindsight is 20/20. And we're seeing in a lot of the newer medical marijuana states where they're initiating protections for patients for their driving rights, their employment rights, their transplant rights, and so forth. Can you give us an update specifically on Assemblyman Leno's employment protection bill and any other actions that are being taken?
I wish I could give you an update on it because the bill's, I believe, going to be voted on today on the Senate floor in California. And I think the vote's going to be close. I know that. There's a lot of other protections for medical marijuana patients that we wish in retrospect we had added, like, for example, retroactivity. Not retroactivity, reciprocity. So that Oregon patients could come down to California and be illegal, but at the time we didn't think about other states doing it.
Right, and there's just so many things out there. You know, we mentioned the housing protections, people that get in difficulties with their child custody arrangements because of medical marijuana use, all these different protections that states like Arizona are implementing in their law, but now we kind of have to go back and fix it in states like Oregon and California because our law has been around for so long. What other things would you like to see changed about California's law?
Well, you know, I really do think that we should work towards establishing a clear regulations for a clearly regulated distribution system, statewide distribution system, sort of like what's done in Colorado. I have some problems with the Colorado plan, The major difficulty in California now is there are no really clear guidelines as to what constitutes a legal dispensary and what is not a legal dispensary. And so practices vary from county to county and city to city, and depending on the court and the DA and the police and everything else. And everybody's upset about the confusion about it. The law is very, very vague on that particular subject. So we really could stand to clarify all of that, but of course it's also very difficult to come up with a system that's really acceptable to everybody, and I think it's going to take a couple of years to work anything like that out, but there's serious efforts afoot to do that. In fact, there's a bill in Sacramento, which we supported, to establish a statewide commission to look at that issue in the next year.
All right. One final question before we let you go, Dale Gehringer, and changing topics just a slight bit here. Any new updates on legalization in 2012 in California?
No, there isn't. We have a couple of proposals that are already out there and have been announced, but don't look likely, well, don't have any big funding base, and there is one group that has a large potential funding base that is still exploring whether or not and how to proceed. So I don't think that's going to be settled for the rest of the year, to tell you the truth. I think it's going to come down to last-minute decisions about polling and wording.
Okay.
That won't take place November.
Yeah, a lot of things to work out, but we are looking forward to moving the ball forward in the West Coast and getting legalization to take root somewhere in these United States. Might as well be in California. Dr. Dale Gehringer is the director of California Normal. You can learn more at canormal.org, and thanks for the great data and the press release on this. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Nice to speak to you, Ross.
All right. When we come back, some radical ranting, some more data on medical marijuana patients in the United States. Stick around. It's Normal Show Live.
The world's greatest cannabis competition is coming back to the Bay Area. Over 100 strains of medical marijuana will go head-to-head to see who's the dankest in California. Indicas, sativas, hybrids, concentrates, edibles, plus THC, CBD, and CBN testing. The High Times Medical Cannabis Cup, June 25th and 26th at the Concourse Exhibition Center in San Francisco. It's gonna be awesome. Get your tickets at MedCanCup.com.
I have to say that there was one question that was voted on that ranked fairly high, and that was whether legalizing marijuana would improve the economy and job creation. I don't know what this says about the online audience, but the answer is no. I don't think that is a good strategy to grow our economy. So.
Nothing funny about nearly 1 million lives wrecked by a marijuana arrest every year, Mr. President. Politely tell President Obama what you think about legalization by calling the White House at 202-456-1111. This is Normal Show Live. Than just your Normal Show Live? Get your daily fix of marijuana news and interviews on the Normal Daily Audio Stash. The weekday podcast available on iTunes and at stash.normal.org.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
At least 1 million to 1.5 million Americans are legally entitled to use marijuana in the United States of America. That's right. We've got new estimates, new data. Thank you, studio audience. 1 to 1.5 million legal medical marijuana patients registered or with recommendations in the United States. And we estimate the market for these folks, $2 to $6 billion, with a B, billion dollars a year. Now, we don't know who this person is, but America's 1 millionth medical marijuana patient was registered or recommended in 2011. It had to have happened early in January or February, but we now strongly believe there are at least 1 million legal marijuana users in the United States of America. Now, the way that we estimated that this would be worth $2 to $6 billion is by taking you have to guess on these things. You have to estimate. So we're assuming a usage of 0.5 gram to 1 gram per day. And for a patient that might have to use 0.5 gram to 1 gram, and we took an average retail price of $320 an ounce. I know some of you are laughing because that's too much. Some of you are laughing because it's too cheap. But, you know, take an average, just say $320. And that works out to $2.3 billion to $6.2 billion worth of cannabis that people are using legally in the United States. Remember, all this is legal marijuana use. Now, the other thing I like to do with this, I like to plug numbers in. I'm a spreadsheet guy. And so I figured, hey, I wonder how much legal pot there is. Just how many legal plants and how much legal medicine could there be in the United States? So if you figure that, like, in Oregon, we have 39,774 patients, and we get to have 24 ounces apiece, you do the math, this times that, it works out to, like, $500,000 ounces that we're allowed to have or so. And, you know, take California, its patients, you know, 1 million patients times 8 ounces. And again, that's the least they could be allowed to have. They could be allowed to have more. When you work all that out, you do all the math, it works out to between, and again, this is, we have to determine, you know, how we're estimating how many patients there are, because we have to estimate California and Washington. So before I give you how much legal weed there is, let's talk about how many legal patients there are. We spoke with Dr. Dale Gehringer from California Normal. He told us that, you know, there's no central registry and there's no, everybody just gets recommendations. So you have to estimate this. But based on numbers from Colorado and Montana, he estimated that between 2 to 3% of the overall population of California have medical marijuana recommendations. Well, 2 to 3%, that works out to 750,000 to 1.125 million. So somewhere between that, you know, about 1 million people in California. Well, for Washington State, I had to come up with an estimate as well. Now, Washington doesn't have a registry. It's the only state without one, although the governor did just pass a law that, or sign a law that will institute a voluntary registry. But right now, they have no registry. So I had to figure that Washington's got to have at least as many patients as Oregon, because the laws are pretty similar as far as what qualifying conditions, although Washington has a couple more than we don't have. But still, the laws are pretty similar, the people, the cultures are pretty similar. So I figure at least 1% of Washington State have cards or recommendations, and that would be 67,000 people. And maybe as high as 1.5%, and I'm willing to make that estimate because, well, they've got bigger urban centers in Washington State. You know, you got Seattle area and you got the Spokane area, right? So big cities tend to have more medical marijuana use. And also because they have kind of a fledgling dispensary system and more doctors could recommend. I mean, osteopaths, naturopaths, and nurse practitioners can recommend in Washington State. So there may be as high as 1.5% of the population. That works out to 100,000 users in Washington State. Now, for the rest of the states, we've got good numbers because they have registries. Oregon, 39,774. In Alaska, just 380 patients. In Maine, just 796. In Nevada, just 860. In Hawaii, around 8,000. Now, Hawaii's numbers are tough to come by. They do have a registry, but it's through law enforcement. It's through the Department of Public Safety, and they don't really like giving those kind of numbers out. So, again, I got in touch with Pam Lichty from Drug Policy Forum Hawaii. She says about 8,000 patients. I'm willing to believe that. Colorado, they've got a registry, 123,890 patients. Vermont, 349. Montana, 30,609. Rhode Island, 3,069. New Mexico, 3,615. Michigan, 75,521. And Arizona, 3,696. That works out to 1.1 to 1.5 million legal marijuana users in the United States, legally entitled to use cannabis. All right, so how much medicine could these people have? 1.1 to 1.5 million legal medical marijuana patients are allowed to cultivate between 17 and 24 million plants. There are 17 to 24 million possible, potential, allowed under state law, cannabis plants grown out there. Now, I'm not saying that everybody's growing to their max. Probably aren't. But that's what's possible. Anywhere from 17 to 24 million legal plants. And as far as possession amounts, it works out to between 566 and 803,000 pounds of legal usable cannabis allowed under state law. And since New Mexico and California will actually allow you to have more than their statutory limits if your doctor says it's okay, and there's also counties like, you know, Oakland and, you know, places in California where they let you have more. Like Oakland lets you have 3 pounds, right? So with that, it's possible there might be 1 million pounds of state legal cannabis allowed under state law. 1 million pounds. So we're talking about 1 million legal users growing up to 24 million legal plants and possessing up to 1 million pounds of legal marijuana. And yet, in those 16 states in the District of Columbia, the trains still run on time. There's not pot zombies roaming the streets. There's not cats and dogs living together in disasters of biblical proportion. In fact, life goes on pretty much the way it went on before we instituted medical marijuana. In fact, none of the dire predictions by our opponents about what would happen if we legalized marijuana, none of them have come to fruition here. For example, one of the things they used to say to us is, oh my God, we cannot legalize medical marijuana. What about the children? What kind of message are you sending to the children? My God, if we legalize medical marijuana, kids will think pot's okay. And the next thing you know, we'll have teenage pot zombies roaming the streets in search of strains. Well, actually, when you look at the data, and you know the government keeps track of this stuff, right? The National Survey on Drug Use and Health from the University of Michigan, they track this stuff every year. I compared the year that these states passed medical marijuana versus the most current year, which is 2008 data, and what was the monthly usage rate for 12 to 17 year olds before medical and after medical. And in every state except Maine, in every medical marijuana state except Maine, teenage use went down. And in the states that have the biggest medical marijuana populations, the Michigan, California, Oregon, Washington, Colorado, Montana, those figures went down by 10% or more of 12 to 17 year olds using cannabis. Now, I'm not trying to say correlation equals causation here. I'm not trying to say that, oh, because we passed medical marijuana, less kids are using pot. But what I am saying is what they predicted, medical marijuana would lead to more kids using pot. The data doesn't show that. Here's another thing they predicted. Oh my God, if we legalize medical marijuana, there'll be stoned drivers on the freeways. There'll be mayhem on the streets. There'll be blood in the intersections. But again, this really hasn't turned out either. I decided to take a look at the highway fatalities. How many people died on the roads in the year that medical marijuana was passed in these states versus how many people died on the roads in 2009. This is data from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, right? And I'm not talking deaths per 100 million miles driven, right? So even as populations have gone up and more people are driving, and they're driving more in every state, fatalities went down except Rhode Island. In every medical marijuana state, fatalities went down. And in Rhode Island, in 2006, they had 81 fatalities. In 2009, they had 83. So it went up by two people, right? In these other states, we look at California. In 1996, they had 3,900 traffic fatalities. In 2009, they had 3,000. They went down by 908 fewer deaths on the road. In Washington state, went down from 662 to 492. Oregon went down from 538 to 377. Now, again, I'm not saying medical marijuana made these streets safer, right? There's all sorts of other things that happen too. You know, drunk driving patrols, increased use to seatbelts, more patrols, etc. Sure, lots of other reasons. But again, the dire prediction from our opponents that medical marijuana would lead to greater fatalities, would lead to greater risks on the road, do not seem to be played out in the data. And one other thing our opponents used to like to say, they used to like to say that, well, if we legalized medical marijuana, it would cause havoc in the workplace. There'd be more injuries, it'd be a safety risk, and productivity would go down. Well, in all the medical marijuana states, since they passed medical marijuana, the GDP, the gross domestic product of those states, they've all gone up. But despite that, let's take a look at OSHA data, Occupational Safety and Health Administration. Workplace injuries and illnesses. How many workplace injuries and illnesses were there in a medical marijuana state when they passed medical versus how many were there in 2009 in every medical marijuana state for which there is data? Every single one of them, workplace injuries and illnesses declined. California went from 7.1% to 4.2%. Washington State went from 9.2% to 5.3%. We're doing it live. new software. We're working it out. We'll get this all good for you. But the point remains. Workplace injuries have gone down in every medical marijuana state. Workplace illnesses have gone down in every medical marijuana state for which there is data. Now, here's just some quick facts as we round up the day here. The 17 jurisdictions where we have medical marijuana encompass 90 million Americans. That's right, 90 million Americans live in medical marijuana states, and that makes up 162 votes in the Electoral College. Patients make up over 3% of the population in Montana, almost 2.5% in Colorado, 2% in California, and over 1% in Oregon and Washington. After Michigan, at 0.75%, every other medical marijuana state has less than 0.3% registered patients. So really, there's six big states for medical marijuana. California, Colorado, Washington, Michigan, Oregon, and Montana comprise 98% of the legal medical marijuana users, and more than 3 out of 4 legal medical marijuana patients live on the West Coast. And again, monthly teen use down, highway fatalities down, workplace injuries down.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
All right, all that data is available up at our main page at normal.org. Check it out and spread the word. We are winning. There's a million of us, and there's going to be a million more before you know it. Thanks for joining us. Stay tuned for Hour 2 for Ganja John, Coleco the Intern, and Cannabis Carry. I'm Radical Russ. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.